How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. Cow comfort. Dealing with the challenges that Heartland dairies face every day. Satisfying consumer needs and wants. Putting a face on American dairy producers and giving American dairy cows a voice. Those are all great topics for a Dairy Week Farmer Forum.
Live from a Davis-less morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we continue Dairy Week coverage with Dr. Gordon Jones. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Joe Bragger and Derek Josie. And right after the news with Betsy Gibbon, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop, I'm outstanding producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Double duty today by the Big Apple. I love it, man. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Have you recovered from last night?
I knew I had an early morning today, so I hung in there as much as I could. And if I wasn't watching, I was sort of watching via Twitter. Which is almost as entertaining.
I wonder if anybody has done a check on Chris Wallace yet this morning to see how he's recovered from last night.
I'm telling you, he needs a bear.
He does. All right. Hey, Joe, thanks for the opening there. Appreciate that. Let's bring in Betsy Gibbon, national reporter, Ag Day. How you doing, Bets?
I'm doing okay. Now, have you recovered from last night? Sure, Joe. Thanks. 2020. Here we go.
Yes, I've recovered. I've recovered a bit, I think. You know, and like Joe said, you get out on Twitter and you start looking at some of the extremist comments that were happening as the debate was going on, after the debate, and in the quote unquote analysis of what took place last night. If you can manage to find the middle, on the analysis, there may have been some points to take away from it. We'll talk about it. If we don't get into it big time today, we'll definitely be talking about it on the free for all tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's start to talk about it in the news. So last night's presidential debate, well, it was something. And as cliche as it sounds, time will tell if it did little to sway the opinions of voters on either candidate. Now, I tried to count the ag-related things, Chip. So what, electric cars? That was mentioned. That's kind of ag-related. Storms in Iowa, which I assume alludes to the derecho. Greenhouse gas emissions, of course. Was the word cow said? Did I miss that? Did I hear that?
I don't think you heard that.
I don't know, but there are more debates coming up, basically, is the news with this situation. So our political correspondent, Jim Wiesmeyer, saying in his newsletter, quote, President Donald Trump's usual strategy was clear Tuesday evening. Throw Democratic nominee Joe Biden off his stride with a broadside of interruptions and personal put-downs. Biden floundered a few times, but, quote, survived the debate. Wiesmeyer goes on to say, quote, moderator Chris Wallace of Fox News was reduced to the role of a bystander. So kind of like you said, there's more to come here.
Exactly. And you know what? John Harith just reminded me that cows were mentioned in the debate.
Okay.
Yes, Trump said that the Green New Deal will eliminate cows.
See, I thought I heard cows in there, but like you said, it was a combination, right, of watching, going through Twitter, trying to comprehend everything. So, okay, exactly. I'll have to listen back to that. Yeah. All right. Also continuing on, the Senate will vote today on legislation to avert a partial government shutdown due to take effect at midnight tonight. Senators voted to end the debate on the matter by a wide margin, clearing the way for a final vote. President Trump is expected to approve the matter, which will keep the government fully open through December 11th. Among others, the bill includes extensions of several expiring programs, including the National Flood Insurance Program and the Surface Transportation Program.
Yeah, now, a lot retail, of work to do yet there.
Yeah, no kidding. Retail store closings in the U.S. hit a record in the first half of 2020, and bankruptcies and liquidations are on pace to set records as the COVID-19 pandemic accelerated industry changes, particularly the shift to online shopping, including filings through mid-August. 29 retailers have sought bankruptcy protection in 2020, surpassing the 22 such filings recorded last year and on pace to rival 2010. All right, moving on to gasoline demand. Gasoline demand in the U.S. has flatlined for much of the third quarter, keeping crude oil prices near $40 per barrel and challenging the global energy industry heading into the final months of the year. Fragile fuel demand joins other indicators of economic activity, from the consumer spending to hiring, and signaling that growth is softening after a surge from April to June. What do you think of that, Chip?
Some stocks information was out this morning, and we've got crude oil higher here today. It indicated an increase in demand, the stocks data did. Therefore, we've got a little bit of strength in crude oil this morning, but not much.
All right, the German Ag Ministry said it has discovered two more cases of African swine fever in wild boars, one from outside the area where others had previously been found. The findings bring the total number of cases in Germany up to 38, the Ag Ministry said in a statement, quote, "The state of Brandenburg must now undertake an appropriate adaptation of the existing protection zones and protection measures to prevent a further expansion of the disease." And the last thing we have here, the CME Group said Tuesday it will launch pork cutout features and option contracts on November 9th, pending regulatory approval. The goal is to provide the U.S. pork industry and pork markets, quote, tailored risk management tools on the cutout. The contracts will be cash settled to the CME Pork Cutout Index. What do you think of that, Chip?
Excellent. Yeah, I've talked to a couple of producers that have said to me in the past that you can't hedge the meat, therefore you can't really use the market. Well, now you can hedge the meat. So I think it's going to bring in some interest. I really do.
Come a long way since your days down at the board of trade, huh, Chip?
Certainly.
Did they have internet
has,
back
certainly
then?
Has. No, we didn't. All right, thank you so much, Betsy. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Let's bring in Margie Echocamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Marg?
Hey, Chip, doing well. You got a doubleheader with me and Betsy this morning.
That's right. Tell me about Simtrax.
Yes, so this is a product coming from Anuvia Plant Nutrients. It's a company that started about 5 years ago, and in October, they are really ramping up to their commercial scale production at their facility down in Florida. I just had a one-on-one Q&A interview with the Anuvia CEO, Amy Yoder, and not only do they have this scale up in commercial production, but they also have a brand new licensing deal with Mosaic, and they're going to be producing a product for Mosaic as well.
Very cool. So what is this product? What makes it so different?
Yeah, sorry, I'm burying the lead here, Chip, because what's really cool about Anuvia's process and technology is they are taking organic waste that would otherwise be headed to the landfill, and they are able to take that into their facility and create a fertilizer product that can be blended with traditional commercial fertilizers or used on its own. And they're basically able to do a roughly one-to-one. So for every ton of commercial or every ton of waste they bring in, they're producing fertilizer for.
Wow. Wow. That is, man, if we can make that happen, sustainability all of a sudden starts entering the conversation a lot more when we're talking about this production of fertilizer. All right, Margie, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That is Margie Echocamp, editor of The Scoop, and you can check her out on Twitter at Farmers Advisor. Okay, when we come back, we're talking cow comfort. Dr. Gordy Jones right here on AgriTalk.
This special edition of AgriTalk is celebrating Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dedicated dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Check out dairyherd.com/dairyweek for free access to our virtual content, sponsor showcase, and more exclusive resources. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health and coverage brought to you by additional support from Allflex, Lallemand Animal Nutrition, and United Animal Health.
From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm, until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and Dairy Week here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've been talking about different dairy-related topics this week, and we're really going to hit it hard this morning. And I want to kick it off the conversation here today with Dr. Gordy Jones. Dr. Gordy Jones, he's known as the cow comfort guru, and he joins us right now. Dr. Jones, welcome so much to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Okay, cow comfort. It's part of an overall efficiency plan in the dairy, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of the things that should be the heart of the dairy. We as dairymen, we as veterinarians, nutritionists, our main goal is to take care of cows. And one of the real benefits here is if we take good care of cows, they'll take good care of us.
Right, right. So when you look back, and you've been specializing in cow comfort for how long, Dr. Jones?
A lot of years. I'm a veterinarian since 1977.
Yeah.
I met Jack Albright from Purdue, a bovine behavioralist, in 83, and he probably set me on the course where I started to understand the highest producing cows were the cows we kept the most comfortable. And so in about 1986, I wrote the first paper on improving the cow's environment. Yeah. And was probably the first guy to ever use the words cow comfort.
Right.
And it's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've put your knowledge and your thoughts to work in some of the biggest dairies in the world, haven't you?
Absolutely. I've traveled and consulted in 37 countries around the world. And
crazy.
And watching cows perform when you make them comfortable has just been fun. So it's still fun to consult.
Yeah, yeah. So in all of that time, if you could put your finger on two or three of the most important advancements that we've made in cow comfort, what would they be?
The first would be a comfortable bed, a deep bedded stall, whether it's bedded with solids, whether it's bedded with sand, whether it's bedded with chopped straw. Bedding has been the backbone of laying cows down. It used to just be something nice we did. Science has come back to tell us that if we lay a cow down one extra hour, we'll get more than 3.5 to 4 pounds more milk. So the first best thing has been bedding. The second thing has been getting her air. As we opened up the tie stalls here in Wisconsin and the free stalls and getting more and more fresh air into the cow, she's become more comfortable, ate more, and gave more milk.
You know, you're kind of talking about the cow's job right there, aren't you? Laying down, eating, and giving milk.
Yep. I like to say, first of all, that milk is the absence of stress. So as we remove stress from cows, she gives us more milk. And I always have said that, you know, a cow has three jobs: stand to milk, stand to eat or drink, and spend all the rest of the time she can laying down. She's sort of the original couch potato. So,
love it. I love it. Now, when they started using sand as bedding in the dairies, I thought that's crazy. But it's one of the most effective because it helps to manage that cow's temperature too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Sand was brought to us by Dr. Bill Bickard at Michigan State, probably the first one to suggest sand, deep bedded sand in freestalls. And sort of the beauty of sand is it provides cushion. It's an inorganic material. It won't grow bacteria that causes mastitis. And it dries quickly. Cows like a dry, comfortable bed. It's like laying at the beach all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's reusable, isn't it? I mean, don't they wash it?
Absolutely. We have a lot of dairies who either use sand lanes to wash it or use mechanical means to wash it. We wash the manure out, we dry it, and it's reusable. The recovery rates are now above 90%, so it becomes a renewable resource for us, too.
That is fantastic. Fantastic. Really cool. Okay, so what are you working on right now to improve cow comfort even further? What are some of the challenges that remain?
Well, the challenge that remains is to remind everybody that we're comfortable at 70 degrees, and a cow at 68 degrees is already starting heat stress. So back to her comfort is giving her more fresh air and doing a lot more for cow cooling. We knew that we needed to cool cows when they were milking, but we also now need to step into the far-off dry cows and the close-up dry cows. So some of the things we're doing now, besides great beds and access to feed, is getting them great fresh air.
Okay. And a lot of that in the ventilation has it's really brought some innovation about in barn design, right?
Right, right. We made a new barn just 2 years ago that was called the All Seasons Hybrid Barn, where above 70 degrees, we force ventilation in to give 60 air exchanges for the cow. So every minute in her barn, she gets fresh air. And then we've done that with wind tunnels, with cross vents, and we've done that with naturally ventilated barns. And the fun thing here is when you give them more fresh air, they eat more and then they lay more. So it works again in her favor.
Okay. What kind of, I mean, when you think about managing the temperature in the barns and the way that dairy production has moved into some of the hotter and drier climates, I'm thinking of Arizona in particular, boy, that's got to be a major challenge, right?
Well, the challenge is to keep a temperature below 68 degrees or keep a cow at her normal thermal neutral. So in temperatures in climates like Arizona where the air is dry, mm-hmm. we can add moisture to the air. We can mist the air and cool the air and get down below that thermal neutral range and for the cow to be comfortable. And here in the Midwest where we have high humidity, we can cool the cow just by soaking. So it's a lot like when the kids go to the beach, no matter how warm the day is, when they jump out, they need a towel because the air blowing on them cools them off. So we soak the cows in our environments here in Wisconsin and across the Midwest where the humidity is too high. But Arizona, we can cool the air.
Yeah, interesting. Do you run into many other health issues? Let me back up. And instead of asking that question, what's the biggest health issue on the cows that we're still trying to overcome? Is it feet?
Well, all of it revolves around the cow bedding. So whether it's mastitis, whether it's lameness, those are two of our biggest problems. And if we can make a dry, clean bed to keep a clean udder, we can reduce mastitis. If we keep a dry, clean bed that's soft for the cow, we can reduce lame problems because she'll spend more time off her feet. And truly wants to if we make a great bed.
Yeah, very cool. How much more is there to gain here, Gordy, from improving cow comfort on the production side?
Okay, there's the top edge of the cows right now are the best cow in the world is here in Wisconsin, and she's above 75,000 pounds of milk in 365 days. So she averages 200 pounds and peaks over 400. Our average cow right now, I like to tell dairymen, if you're not at 85 pounds to 90 pounds a cow, you're missing our genetic potential. And most of that's found in cow comfort. And the fun thing about cow comfort, if we fix that, it doesn't matter. Once you fix a stall, the stall is always fixed. It's there. It's not like giving the cow something and a cow leaves us. Instead, the facility is there and we fixed it. So the real gains are to be made. We still have gains to be made in performance because the genetic teams are making us a cow that can milk very well. And all we have to do is provide her the environment to do it in.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Dr. Chad Dechow from Penn State about genetics tomorrow. Should be an interesting conversation with him.
Great.
I'm looking forward to that. Real quick, Dr. Jones, nutrition. It plays a big role in cow comfort too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we used to balance rations for pounds of milk, whether that was 85, 75, 95, 100 pounds of milk. But cows have to peak at 150, 160, or even higher, like the top cow in the world who's doing 200 pounds. Well, you can't balance a ration for 200 pounds. Instead, we want to make great mouthfuls of feed and give the cow the opportunity to eat that. So we make safe mouthfuls. Most of the problems cows have either come from bad nutrition, bad facilities, or something like that.
Gotcha. Dr. Jones, I feel like I could talk to you for an hour, but we are out of time. Thank you so much for making time for us today on Dairy Week.
Hey, thank you very much for inviting me. It's been my pleasure, and remember to drink another glass of milk.
Amen to that. All right, that is Dr. Gordy Jones, cow comfort guru. When we come back, we're going to get the Farmer Forum started. We've got Joe Brager from Wisconsin and Derek Josie from Oregon.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your dairy operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. Rumensin is a trademark of Elanco or its affiliates.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, how'd this bean market get back on top of 10 bucks?
Well, I think, Chip, what we saw is the funds were lightening up their length earlier on in the week, and now we get ahead of the reports here this morning, and they're adding some back on. So I think that's a large part of it. We also had a daily soybean sale to unknown destinations this morning. So that's given us some fundamental reasons behind the price strength this morning.
Excellent. Okay, yeah, we've got the reports. The annual small grain summary is coming our way, but I don't think that we're really looking for much change on the wheat crop estimates, but we've got these solid gains going on in wheat. What's happening?
Well, a large part of that is Ukraine, and it's been dry over there in the Black Sea region, but more reports out overnight from Ukraine on planting pace being slow, probably not going to get all the intended acres planted, potential impacts to yield, and as a result, we're seeing a good flurry of buying interest here mid-morning.
Yeah, we certainly are, and that's got to be helping out on corn and soybeans as well. Take us over to the livestock trade. What do you like?
Well, poor close in the hog market yesterday down at the bottom of the two-week trading range, but bouncing back this morning with strong gains in all the contracts except for that October. Obviously, it's running up against expiration within the next couple weeks, and that's kind of holding that contract back at the moment. Live cattle futures trading with a firmer tone, just slightly to the upside. Still waiting on cash cattle trade to develop there, and kind of a mixed opinion in terms of whether the cash will continue to strengthen this week or not.
Yeah, everybody's keeping a real close eye on that and that beef movement and how much we can get out there into the retail side. Thanks, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Quelaxin. Use Quelaxin to prevent and treat respiratory disease in your herd. Find Aspen products at animalhealthinternational.com.
And even in this Dairy Week celebration here on AgriTalk, today's Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. You can learn all about it. Just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. You guys, I am excited about this. This is going to be fun. Let's bring in Joe Brager. Joe is a dairy producer there in Wisconsin. He's also the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau. He joins us right now. Joe, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
Very good. We're having a really nice fall, and I'm very happy to be on the program.
Excellent. Man, I wish we were up in your state right now over in Madison at the Expo.
Well, it's virtual, so that's a change in the history of the program. It's the first time it's not being held in person, so kind of a big blow, but also a reflection of the COVID crisis and what that has done to a lot of programming and a lot of events around the state and country, but still being held in some form.
Absolutely. All right, Joe, we're going to get right back to you here. Let's bring in Derek Josie from Tillamook, Oregon. Derek, how's your morning going, man? Welcome to AgriTalk.
Yeah, thanks. My morning's great. Got the last of our corn silage chopped yesterday and bunkers all covered, so life is good.
Good, good, good. Tell us about your farm up there in Oregon.
Well, we are, fourth generation here on the farm. We milk Jerseys, and we're part of the Tillamook Co-op over here in Tillamook, Oregon. We milk 500 of the little brown cows.
Yeah. Yeah. Those cows have become social media darlings, Derek. You've made a star out of many of them, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I like to think they make a star out of themselves. They're the ones that decide whether they want to hang out with me or not, so...
Exactly. Derek, what's the situation with wildfires up your way now?
Well, it's pretty smoky today, but that's from Northern California. Last week, we had quite a bit of rain roll through, so Oregon pretty well got doused, thankfully. It was pretty touch and go the week before that. We had a wildfire about 10 miles away, but thanks to a strong local force and state resources, we contain the one near us to, I think, like 200 acres. So we were feeling pretty lucky there.
Derek, did those fires get in the way of your market or any of your business, or did everything kind of continue to function as it normally does?
It functioned as normal for us, but I know a lot of the dairy farmers out in the Willamette Valley were at stage two evacuation orders, which means if it bumps one more stage, they're supposed to figure out how to relocate their cows and everything. And you know, I can't even imagine being in that position.
Derek, do you have a plan for evacuating 500 little brown cows?
No, you really don't. You build fire breaks. I mean, most farms have a pretty good fire break all around them. You just plow some fields, soak the ground all around the barns, and play it as safe as you can. But I don't know how you would. For example, you know, our county probably has 20,000 cows in it.
Wow.
I don't think there's any way you can relocate 20,000 cows that quickly.
That would be a tough, tough job. All right, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, some of the farms over in Willamette Valley went to sleep, and the next morning they woke up at stage two with wildfires within 50 miles coming straight at them. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely a nightmare. Crazy, crazy. Joe, at least you're not worrying about fires up there in Wisconsin, but the status of the dairy industry in your state, it's been an issue here for a while now, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I was just looking over some numbers this morning, and you go back to 2003, we had 16,000 dairy herds in Wisconsin. The start of this year, we were down to 7,292 dairy herds. We've been through five tough years, right around the, started looking at the beginning of the year that things might pick up, and then, of course, we've all experienced, as I referenced before, the COVID disruptions.
Right.
So a difficult time for dairy farms, but still, we're breaking records. Last year, we had record domestic consumption of dairy products. We had record exports. The one record I'm not very proud of is the record of losing 818 dairy herds in our state. So it's really challenging times for dairy farmers.
Yeah, representatives Kind and Gallagher in your state of Wisconsin there, Joe, they're bringing forward some dairy commission legislation. What's that all about?
Well, I'm very happy to say that Wisconsin Farm Bureau, that we got to help work on this with them and encourage people to ask for support from their congressmen. As I mentioned, we've been through a tough time with dairy. There's a lot of things that this commission would address. And what's really being set up is to direct the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture to form a commission made up of dairy farmers, dairy experts, consumer, and industry representatives. We want to stabilize these prices for farmers so they can continue to support our rural communities while protecting the consumer at the same time. So really looking at transparency in pricing, federal milk marketing order reform, where farmers have a seat at the table and get a voice in their milk pricing, increasing once again our domestic consumption, export opportunities, and then you go ahead and you look at especially what COVID brought to light in much of agriculture is really the supply chain system. We had tremendous demand, yet we are, when we got hit with this COVID, we were not able to change the industry on a dime. Processors were not able to shift to the consumer's demands. And, of course, we also, even though we hit all these records, we have oversupply that continued to drive down the farmer's margin. And so looking at a supply chain overhaul is vitally important as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. Some good points there. Derek, the demand interruption or disruption that we had from COVID-19, how did that impact your co-op, Tillamook?
You know, we were, I like to say we were lucky because we are pretty much just a, we are on the consumer side and not the restaurant side of the business. So we didn't get hit nearly as bad as a lot of places did. And with the strong brand we had, our co-op actually helped our farmer owners keep the milk price pretty steady during those couple months that were just a disaster. I'm feeling really blessed.
Derek, the Tillamook co-op is one thing, but that brand, oh my goodness, up and down the West Coast, it's an awfully popular brand, isn't it?
Yes it is. And you know, we're expanding nationally, and so we have a supply chain that we have been working on, and all the chips seem to fall in place that we were able to help with supply chain issues where other companies couldn't.
Gotcha. Yeah, Joe, you were mentioning it, but one thing that the disruption did was it exposed some of the vulnerabilities that we've got on the processing side. Are we going to look to address that in Wisconsin as well?
I think that's vital that we address those issues. Finding that balance between our supply and demand, being able to more rapidly adjust the changes when they come up. And it's it's not just a dairy issue. Our pork producers, our beef producers, all of them have struggled with the same issues as that sudden shift occurred. And we need a more nimble system.
I agree.
Yeah, that is absolutely the truth. I want to talk about this a little bit more when we get into the next segment, but I want to kick it off with Derek. I love the fact that you are you're putting a face on a dairyman. You're out there in front of the public. You're talking to consumers. You're doing a great job of it. But tell me, Derek, why? Why did you decide to do this, get out in front and talk with consumers the way that you do?
You know, I honestly didn't see it going where I ended up. I thought I'd just be one of the many dairy bloggers that are online just telling our story. It's taken on a life of its own, that's for sure.
Where is it taking you? What are you doing?
Well, I basically do a daily update video of my life on the farm, and I reach on average 10 million people every week now. It's kind of insane.
Yeah. Well, and it's a thing among the dairymen, because I know that there are dairymen that watch what you're doing, But it's that connection with the consumer that is that has impressed me so much, Derek. That's got to be rewarding.
It does feel good because a lot of the times we talk about how we're just preaching to the choir a lot as farmers. And, you know, with all the tools that social media gives you to see where you're reaching, it feels good when you look at the top 10 cities that are watching your stuff, and it's New York City, L.A., Portland, Oregon, like Dallas, Texas, a couple in Florida. And those are your top cities. And you're
That's
thinking,
fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. I want to talk more about the social media aspect of what Derek is doing, and I want to find out why Joe took on the role of president of Farm Bureau.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and Dairy Week here on AgriTalk and across all the Farm Journal platforms. Love it that you made time for us here this morning. And we've got the Farmer Forum going, which is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, which is a national partnership designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture and its economic and environmental benefits. Just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more. Farmer Farm, Joe Brager from Wisconsin. He's also the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau. And Derek Josey from Tillamook, Oregon are our farmers today. Derek, I want to start with you again here because the motto, when I go to your website, you see it, it's right up front. Extreme transparency built on a foundation of honesty is where your message is coming from. What made you decide to take on that?
Well, probably because I was, you know, before I started, I was seeing what other people were doing. And if you're on social media, you see a lot of gorgeous pictures of picturesque farms, everything's perfect, and we all know that farming is it's wonderful, but there is times that is not the case. And so by making the public think that farming was always perfect and everything was hunky-dory all the time, when these activist videos would come out where there'd be a cow getting lifted with hip lifters, nobody understood that was actually somebody trying to get a cow up and help her. So we needed to actually show farming in general how it really is and stop trying to make it look like what's in the movies.
Well, they romanticized farming in a lot of ways, Derek, and it's a business. It's a job. It's got some there are times that it's got a little bit of ugliness to it, and you present that and you do a great job of it. And I, like I said in a couple of our communications, I became a fan of yours very early on because it's just real life, man. It's real life, and I love it. I love it. Joe, what made you decide to take on the responsibility of president of Wisconsin Farm Bureau?
Well, I'm kind of inspired listening to Derek because honesty and transparency, I really think that's important everywhere. You know, I want to be perfectly clear. I have a passion for agriculture. I have a passion for farming and people. But I also am not a person who likes to sugarcoat an issue. If we're hurting out here in our rural communities, you know, doing a glass half full or the tighten our belts type scenario, that's not necessarily the most productive. I believe that if things aren't working, you work hard to change them. I also believe that one of the most important things in life is to not focus on what you can't do. Focus on what you can do. And whether it's cow comfort earlier with Gordy Jones, there's always a little something you can do there. Where it's talking about agriculture here with Derek, there's still always something we can do. And one thing that I want to make perfectly clear with September being a mental health awareness month is that people understand that it's okay to not be okay. Yep. I've got a pile of bills that looks bigger than the income coming in. So I understand that, and I want to make sure that people know that they're not alone and that they have to be able to reach out and we support each other through these difficult times. That is so critical going forward.
Derek, that's part of your goal as well, isn't it, to share some of the stresses?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you watch my videos, you can tell when I'm having a stressful day. And
yeah,
I don't pretend otherwise. Some days I look pretty ragged on some of my videos, and you know, that's part of life. And if people see that I have those days where I struggle, it helps without me even having to say anything. It helps people go, well, okay, I'm not the only one that's having a rough go of it right now.
That's right. That's right. Very important. And like Joe said, we're here the last day of September. It's the last day of Mental Health Awareness Month, but we need to continue to watch out for each other during what can be a really stressful time. So, guys, tomorrow I'm talking with Dr. Chad Dechow from Penn State about genetics. Derek, I want to know, what made you choose those jerseys?
Well, I, you know, when I came home to the farm, we had Holstein's jerseys and Guernsey's. Okay. We bought my uncle out, and the Guernsey's were kind of his thing, and we found somebody they paid for them, but it was more like, thank you, take these off our hands. But my parents have a passion for the Jersey genetics. We are one of the top Jersey herds in the country. And once you either love jerseys or you hate them, because they definitely have attitudes. But where we're situated and how we're paid for our milk, they were the logical choice. We're paid on components. They are a smaller, more efficient breed. I know Holstein guys will argue with me on that one, but I had Holsteins and jerseys, so I'm not biased. I just know which one paid the bills better.
Gotcha. I mean, you're talking about the milk fats, right, in those jerseys?
Milk fat and protein, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, I've only got about 30 seconds for you on that question, but what's your genetics?
Well, we've got Holsteins, and of course, my parents immigrated from Switzerland, so we'd be completely amiss if we didn't have a few Brown Swiss. Brown Swiss teach me a lot. They teach me that I better temper myself, because there's nothing more stubborn than a Brown Swiss calf. So it teaches me some life lessons.
Oh, my gosh. My wife's family was in the Brown Swiss business as well, so I know exactly what you're talking about there, Joe. You guys, this was a lot of fun. It was good to get to know both of you. Thanks so much for coming on and being part of Dairy Week here on AgriTalk. Thanks, Derek. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Take care.
And thank you so much, Joe. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you. Thank you much. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Yeah, that's Joe Brager from Wisconsin, Derek Josie from Oregon. Come back this afternoon. Davis will be back, and we'll have the details of the USDA reports right here on AgriTalk. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.